She puts the F in Freudian slip Franny Choi.
And they're the splash of SoCo in your morning dunkies, Danez Smith.
And welcome to Verses, the podcast where poets confront the ideas that move them.
Presented by the Poetry Foundation and Post Loudness.
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 Oh. Who knows why we are allowed to do this?
Morning. How you feeling, Franny?
I'm doing just fine.
You're doing just fine.
Yeah. I feel like a little in my feelings because I drove to Chicago from Ann Arbor, and I've been listening to The God of Small Things on audiobook.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. It's like, it just means that I'm like driving for hours and just like weeping.
Yeah.
Which is actually not the worst way to spend an afternoon.
No.
I would say.
No.
Driving and weeping.
Mm-hmm.
This, I guess, actor? Is that what you call the person
voice
that
actor.
Reads it?
Yeah,
the voice actor,
actor
who's
yeah,
reading
yeah.
it? It's mm-hmm. just killing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just killing it consistently. And she's so good. And I just get like so, so caught up in the language. That
yeah, because that book is so lyrical.
It's so lyrical. And like, I think hearing it out loud is like really doing it for me.
Word.
Have you been reading anything good lately?
Yeah. I've been slowly but surely chipping my way through Kaveh Akbar's Calling the Wolf a Wolf.
I just read their chapbook like earlier this summer. I hadn't read it.
Oh, the chapbook is phenomenal.
Oh, my God. God.
Yeah.
So good.
I cried reading the chapbook. And the book is really good because I think Kaveh's done something really cool where I think like it definitely has its themes topically, you know. It's definitely writing a lot of lines talking about alcoholism and addiction and desire, relationships to God and stuff like that. But I think what he's done is like he's moved past almost like topical leanings. Shout out to Hanif Abdurraqib for saying that when I was talking about to him. And
biting people's thoughts.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is a Hanif Danez collaboration.
All right.
So like moving past topical leanings and moving more into like kind of curating or manipulating mood in a really cool way. So like some poems in the book almost feel more like trying to ride the line of how the poems want you to feel instead of like what like information they're trying
like
to relate
about,
to about
yeah,
about
yeah,
this.
It's
beyond about this, which is something I'm still trying to figure out as a writer too.
Ooh.
So it's really cool. And it's always good to have a good book, you know? A good book to read. And I'm really excited for this conversation with Rach Jackson because she's writing a good book, and that book is in response to
the good book. Yeah.
Trademark.
See what we did there?
Yeah, like, I see. Yeah. I
trademark.
See. I see. It's almost like we planned that, you know? Like we knew we were gonna say that.
Wow, we are so in sync. Like,
I know.
We are so smart in the moment.
I know.
No plans.
Duh.
Improv. It's like we finish each other's
relationships. Franny, leave this nigga for me.
I can't
do it myself.
No, you like him.
I know. Okay, not current boo. Current boo, you're still boo.
Whoever's boo at the time. You're good.
I'm good.
Unless you're not.
No names. Oh, but I'm super excited to get into this interview with a poet, spoken word artist. Well, those are the same thing. But poet, also like spoken word artist because her poems ain't boring. And educator, Rach Jackson.
Yes. Rach Jackson is a Chicago native who earned her degree in elementary education at DePaul University in June of 2013. As a Golden Apple Scholar, Rachel teaches third grade in the Chicago public school system. She plans to build her own school within the next 15 years. Hell yeah. Rachel prides herself in her current weaving of social justice and higher-ordered thinking curricula in schools throughout Chicago and its surrounding suburbs. In addition to being an educator, Rachel is a poet and playwright. The subject matter surrounding her works ranges from character-driven fiction to the recent delve back into poetic verse exploring her personal struggles. Just a quick note, in this interview, we start talking about the National Poetry Slam, which, for those who don't know what the National Poetry Slam is, aren't familiar with that world, it's a big poetry competition that happens every summer in a different city where teams of poets from all over the country come together to compete in this basically an elaborate game designed really to get people in a room excited about poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're super excited to talk to Rach. Let's do it.
Let's get into it.
Hi, Rach.
Hello, Franny.
Hi.
Hello.
Your lip color is so good as always.
Thank you. Walgreens.
Okay.
Really? Walgreens. What? It was like $6, and I was like kind of pressed about the $6, but I spent it.
Word. For those of you who can't see because this is a podcast,
all right.
Sure.
The lip color is like a very It's like
a bright violet.
If somebody murdered like Grimace from McDonald's and harvested his body.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That is actually, it's a high praise right there. Yes. High praise.
It's like that. It's not literally that.
Fresh dead Grimace. Fresh dead
Grimace.
Y'all are so weird. Y'all are so, how's your day going so far?
It is going good. I'm very happy to be here. This is a very fun place. And we're adults who are put in a playground, is what I'm realizing.
So just back context, we record in the Cards Against Humanity office because they are really like supportive of podcasts and have a lot of dope projects that have to do with podcasts. And so they have like rooms that are just like full of like gongs and comfy things, and then like a drawer full of string cheese. Avocados.
A Lego room.
And avocados, motherfucker.
That's what's really important. You know, everything else were like Legos, pillows, the Moroccan room, gong, but the avocados, fire.
Mm-hmm. In various stages of ripeness, but all pretty acceptable.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, Rach, I feel like we should do this on air because I haven't seen you in person yet. Congratulations on winning New Pick.
Thank you. <Yes. laughs> Thank you. So
what is New Pick for the folks at home? What
New Pick is the National Underground Poetry Slam that happens. It's no mic, and it happens late at night, and it's a lot of drinking, and it's a $125 buy-in. So people who do it who are not prepared, I just, you know, they're living life. They're rich. Mm-hmm. You know, I ain't got it like that. But the motivation is that final prize money, which is $2,000. So I was like, very pleased.
I have now paid $250 to lose.
Oh,
which feels okay.
I remember because my first time at Nationals, we were in New Pick together. And
yes.
I was like,
oh, and then was that the one where Dinez and I got matched up and had to go, we went head to head?
No, I was at the one in 2015 when you went against Toaster.
Oh my God, that was awesome.
And I remember that. And I was like, oh God.
Right. So it's a head to head, and then it's the audience votes with applause.
Mm-hmm.
What was your game plan going in? Think about it.
Definitely drinking. Aggression and loudness really works for New Pick. Hmm. And so, like, I can perform whatever I write in different ways. So I was definitely like, okay. Like, Toaster was like, you need some beer? We got beer. Like, it was like a little people. But I, like, studied, like, who else I was going against, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, if I go against this person, like, I know what they have. And there's this one poet. He's a brilliant poet, Black Chakra.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of black poems. And I was like, all right, I'm going to save my black poem for you. Mm-hmm. And that was the Pantoum that won against him. I don't know. I felt very proud of that, too, because I was like, with a poetry form. Y'all see me?
Yeah. Using a traditional poem in this, like, slam context, that's fucking amazing.
It was very fun. And I was very drunk, but also very, like, it was very late, too. So, like, for people who don't know, it starts after Group P's finals, which ends at around 1, maybe 1 a.m., maybe midnight. And so it was very late, but a lot of people are like, pumped up about New Pick, so many people come, but throughout the night they leave. And for this one, it was so many people that stayed that I was like, okay, just stay here for me. Like, even when I was like in 2015 when I was watching, I was like, oh, you have to really circle the room. Like, you can't have your back to one person. That's really important. Oh, you have to project. Right. Oh, you have to get low with the writing still being there. You can have all these performance aspects, but if you're not bringing in your writing, you also won't do well.
Right, because it's all
as you won a New Pick in.
I won in 2000. What was that? 14.
14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's because it's all the other poets at this competition who are there. So it's like, how did that feel like winning over the respect of like your peers, like the people who are like other poets?
It felt so cool. It felt so cool, and it felt so powerful that like round after round after more people were like losing, I actually was pulling first every round. And so I had to like just knock them out. It was very powerful too. Like I kept going against women. But it was only like a few women in the competition total.
Hmm.
And it was very cool to win as a woman. I was like, oh, wait, I stuck on my tongue. I realized this is a podcast. I'm like, But it was, but I will say, like, I didn't feel that like male like aggression like towards it. Hmm. I just felt myself like, ha, look at me, woman, doing my thing. It was very exciting.
How are you feeling about Slam lately? I mean, is this thing like, helping with that?
Yes and no. My fear is to get trapped in Slam. I don't want to get trapped in Slam. Like, I've been like submitting, I've been writing, I'm working on my book. I feel like it's very easy to get trapped in Slam once you win. Like, I've gotten like booked to other places. They're like, oh, we want you to be in the Slam, we want you to be in the Slam. And like, that's fine. Like, I also want that money, so I will definitely travel and Slam. But as far as like, you know, my goal is always to have a book. My goal is always to be like published writer consistently. Mm. So I felt like winning New Pick was something that I wanted off my like bucket list, per se. But like, I know that this slam is not going to be something that I'm doing every year.
Yeah.
And not to say like slammy is like bad or anything. I just know like some people can get trapped in slam and then it's like the competitive part. And so I think like even bringing it back to doing a pantoum and the specific poetry form, like bringing poetry form back into an underground slam was very necessary. It just felt good to win a poetry slam with a poetry form that is very hard to memorize. Fun fact, not a lot of people knew this. I wrote out the pantoum order, like the numbers on the back of my hand. There's like one video on Instagram where you see me like, I'm like saying the poem and then I like raise my hand backwards, but it like looks like I'm like doing this. So I was able to see the order because a pantoum is 10 lines in a specific order and then one line moving changes everything. Mm. So that was kind of hard.
Have you written a lot in like traditional form before? Like, is that something, is that like part of your wheelhouse?
Oh, I'm a strong believer in the pantoum.
It's in the pantoum specifically.
Pantoum specifically. Yeah. I write a lot of pantoums. I think that they're so fun and I think that they are hard. But once it flows, it flows. And so like around line 6 and 7, you're like, this is terrible. And you want to like throw the whole poem away. But once you get over that hump. But I also really like Sestinas. I like poetry forms. I think that I like reading them. I like the challenge that it makes. Like, if you are writing in something that says you have to write in this order, then I feel like it makes me more creative for the pantoum. I only have 10 lines to say what I want to say. This past summer, like at Pink Door, Rachel did a pantoum workshop where
Can you explain briefly what Pink Door is?
Pink Door is a writing retreat led by the glorious Rachel McKibbins.
Hey.
He's like, hey.
What up?
And it's for queer, femme, non-binary women of color who just want to be away from this world of whiteness and entitlement. And then you like grow and you write. It's like a coven and it's very important and powerful. And so this past summer when there was a pantoum workshop, it was a challenge. And we were talking about like you can be confined to do this certain 10 lines, but it's your job to make those lines have to actually mean two things every time. And that's the biggest thing about a pantoum is like they repeat twice, which means they can hold two meanings. That was something that, I don't know. I'm smiling about pantoums. Like, I'm like, I love pantoums.
Girl, I feel you. I almost cried twice in the last week talking about Crown to Sonnet. So I
totally understand. Yes.
The form excitement. It's
poetry forms are, and you know, like, I wish I could laugh at my high school teacher, like my high school English teacher, because like I was like poetry forms, like, but I was only getting presented with old white men. You know, here we are, people of color talking about poetry forms and smiling. And yeah, like this is what we need. This is what we do. So I think, you know, screw you.
No, it's real, yo. Like if you would have asked me at like 19 if I like sonnets, I would have told you like, fuck no, bro. Like, boring ass Shakespeare shits. But like reading Marilyn Nelson's A Wreath for Emmett Till, which is like a beautiful, like heroic crown of sonnets. Like, it's like, it's set up like a children's book, but it makes me cry every time I like dive into that joint. And it shows you that form isn't dead in a way. Because I think a lot of us, like, even you talk about high school, like, I thought poetry was dead in high school,
definitely,
too. Because I never saw anybody living. And it wasn't until I started seeing younger, even, like, in people in their 30s and stuff like that, being poets and being brown and being, like, funky and, like, actually cool.
Like,
I was
alive.
Like, oh, shit. Yeah, I was like, oh, they brought this back. And I was like, it never went anywhere. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were working on the first book. What's that been like? What are you building towards? How what are you discovering about you and your writing? This was his first project.
So I was raised very Christian, non-denominational, and then like specifically revisiting a lot of the Bible stories and just really questioning like, that was very terrible and they taught this. So one of the poems that I did at New Pick, one of the poems I ended up doing this poem on Final Stage is about Job and like what depression is and how the story of Job is that Job was living his life. God was showering him with blessings. Mm-hmm. And the devil was like, Job only worships you because you're giving him all these blessings. You should take him away. And God, instead of like being, you know, the higher being that we're taught, was like, you're right. I'm going to prove to you that Job will still worship me. And he bet him, right? So like learning it as a kid,
they gloss over it, mm-hmm. but I read it. No, he murdered his kids.
His wife, right?
Burned his, wait, his wives, burned his land, gave him leprosy. Like, God didn't just take away blessing.
Oh, Job is a, yeah.
It's a terrible story.
All because like, God was trying to prove a point to the devil.
Yes, it's so bad.
I thought he just made him hang out in a whale for a bit.
No, that's Jonah.
Is Job, spelled like Job.
But even the story of Jonah... It smelled like Jonah. Even the story of Jonah, I could talk about for a while too. Like the story I'm writing, so I've written the poem about Job, and I'm like writing the poem about Jonah, where Jonah made some mistakes for show, and he tried to hide out on a boat, and God found him, and he told the people on the boat, "Hey, like you can either all die or throw this one man overboard." And everybody was like, "Goodbye," threw him overboard. Like it's like,
peace, Jonah.
Yeah. I just met you tonight. I have no loyalty. I don't know you. And so it's just a lot of these stories. I'm off the J. So my final like story that I've been writing on is Jezebel, right? Mm. So like, what does Jezebel mean now?
Well, she's a prostitute. Well, she was. Wasn't she?
She was married. No. Jezebel was married to her husband, Ahab. And what she did was, she was like, "Oh, we married. I don't worship your God. Come worship these gods." Mm. Yeah, so Jezebel, the word of Jezebel has like twisted into hoe, like slut, like has been like pushed to something else. But in the Bible, she definitely, I mean, like under Christianity, right, she made him worship false gods. But even with the story of Eve and how we treat women in general, like how it's all Eve's fault, but Adam actually bit the apple. Like Jezebel was like, "Ahab, like I'm married to you my husband. I don't worship these gods." And it has like transformed her in like trifling hoe. Like, so my poems have been like, also balancing like what I was taught about, like, what about these stories? And also, I was having a conversation with Jose Olivares, awesome poet. And I was like, I'm kind of scared about like the different Bible poems that I'm writing because like I had a show in Philly a month ago and a person walked up to me after and was like, not fucking with me.
Oh, wow.
Like he pulled me aside. He was like, "I work in the church and I feel like your poem about Job is not necessary." And I was like, "True. Like, let me know what's up." Like,
yeah, not necessary is a hell of a thing to say.
He was really feeling himself. And so like I let him talk and he was just like, in church, you're supposed to take pieces of the story. And so I like, I heard it and then I let him have his thing. And I said, "Well, if you're only supposed to take parts of the story, why would you even teach it?"
Yeah. If you ain't gonna teach the whole text.
What's the point? Yeah. Like, and so he didn't have an answer. So I kind of did it like a backwards, like walk away from him. And like the next act was happening. So then another person was performing. So I kind of was able to slither back into the crowd. The whole book is not going to be about like Bible stories and like myths that we were taught. However, that is a part of my life. And like I am writing in response and like this is my intro book. So I like that's a big part of it. So, like, I was, like, nervous because I was, like, well, if one person doesn't like it. But everybody who I tell that story to, they were, like, there are a lot of people that will not like your work regardless. But there will be also a section of people that are, like, I needed this to be said. Like, I didn't know that. Thank you. Or I was in church when I was a kid and I was really struggled with how women are treated across, like, different stories in the Bible. Mm-hmm. So
there's, like, stakes when you're writing in conversation with stories that, like, a lot of people have a lot of investment in.
They
right?
really vibe with it. Like, that's their thing. Yeah. Like, I have another, well, I wrote it and then I've been also revisiting, thank God, right, for Google Drive. Because, like, I, like, have drafts and then I'm like, oh, this is trash. But I'm not, like, ripping it out of my notebook and throwing it away. I revisit them months later and I'm like, oh, like, actually.
Slightly less trash than I thought it was.
Look at me, doubting me, and I'm kind of decent. Like, with Jacob and Rachel, where Jacob was walking down the little path, saw Rachel, he was like, damn, shorty's fine. Went to her dad and was like, the dad was like, worked for 7 years for her. I was like, wow, did Rachel have a say in this at all? No, okay. Jacob works for 7 years. Her dad assigns Leah instead of Rachel. So he wakes up the next morning next to Leah and he's like, damn, I did not want your ass. Like, what happened? Went back to the dad and the dad was like, work 7 more years. So he worked 14 years for 2 wives. And it's like, and everyone's like, that's the act of love. He worked 14 years for her. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dang, I wish I was on Next Level where somebody was like, dang, girl, I'm going to work 14 years for you. But it turns out, like, never in the text did he ask her, for her hand. It's just a lot. But that's, like, a chunk of where I'm writing right now.
I think, like, it's a good part of any sort of religious journey. I remember when I started, like, questioning sort of what I was learning because I grew up Baptist and all types of bullshit, too. When did that questioning... Okay.
I felt it. I was like,
know what I'm saying.
No, I felt with you.
God knows my heart. I can tell.
God knows my heart.
When did that line of questioning start coming to you and like writing poems about it? Sort of like, what is that revealed about your sort of like questioning and meandering through these stories about Christ?
As a kid, I say like I was around 11 or 12 when I started realizing like you have not graduations, but you move from Sunday school classes. That's a thing. Like, you know, age 9 to 10, And so the 13 and up teacher basically would let us know, like, if you're not saved, you'll be gay. Like,
well, I'm not, I'm sure that's not how it works. I was surely baptized and surely suck a mean number.
And I'm like, look at me now, surprise, surprise. prophecy looking.
Saved and hoed.
But I think the first poem I wrote about like actual religion was the masturbation poem that like some people know about, where I was like, we people with vaginas, we definitely masturbate as well. Like, that's a thing. Like, a lot of people, like, they don't know where it's going at first, but then it's like it strings people along. It's, how does it go? My body is my temple. I keep it tidy when I visit. And you can see some people being in the audience like, what is she talking about? And then like I break character all the time and I'm like, I'm talking about masturbation, y'all. And then the whole audience is like, woo.
I like that.
I like that. Snap, 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 snap.
I was doing that earlier. Yeah.
So yeah, I think like it's not all about Bible stories, but also like sexuality and religion, or like classism and religion, right? Like my homie Joel, like not letting nobody in his church in Houston, like that's a thing. Like, it's just like a lot of things about religion and praising these people that are in power that they really are trash. Like, let's really talk about it. Let's really call them out. So like that, I feel like that's one main thing that I've been consistently writing over this past year. And honestly, only like three are book worthy, but I've been writing it. And you know the process, like I'm the laying it out, looking at it. I'm like, ooh, well, you were angry when you wrote this. So this is actually kind of just ranting, or, oh, you know, actually you.
But, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, because people don't normally think about that a lot. I think like all the poems that you have to write towards a book that actually don't get to go in it. Like, you really got to write three books in order to have one in a lot of ways. Yeah, right.
So. And you get so sad when you don't put them in, but it's like, you still matter to me. You're still in my drive, but you do not fit.
I was talking to Jamal May, and he said that, like, once you start cutting poems from your book that are good, that's when you know, like, your book is starting to get, like, really good. So I think, like, do you feel like through writing these poems, do you feel like it's a process of learning? Are you learning new things about the stories as you're writing about them?
Right. You read to be a better writer. And so if I'm writing about a topic and not researching these stories, then I'm just kind of doing anything, right? So I feel like I understand a lot more, or I catch a lot more. Nate said it, and I wrote it down. Noah, something how he said, in that day, I thought I was holy, or something like that. And he was saying that I thought. Like, really focusing on the words that are said, or in that day. Like, not today, not that other day.
In that day.
In that day. It's the Bible does that a lot. And so when you're really reading these stories, and then I, like, read people's, like ideas and essays on it. But, like, when you read how things are worded specifically in the Bible, and this is a document that's been translated over and over and over again, so there's surely, like, holes and stuff like that, it's very cool to try to put some pieces together yourself. It's very fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that, like, for a lot of people that's our earliest, like, kind of trying to close read texts even, you know? Like, the earliest time that we're watching somebody stand up in the front of a room and, like, pick apart, like, a sentence, you know, and, like, really talk about it.
No,
you know?
Definitely. No. Definitely.
Another part of your life, on top of, like, also being, like, phenomenal poet and spoken word artist, is that you're a teacher.
Yes.
And you teach the babies, too, which is so cool to me, because I'm just like, these kids don't even know how cool of a teacher they have, because there's, like, you know, there's, like, the one we just talked about, you know, like, poems about masturbating and shit. And then you go teach somebody how to fucking count.
And that's a thing, like, I was saying out there, like, they're like, man, that song we learned was real cool. And I'm like, aha, now you know your multiplication facts. Like, tricked you. You thought it was a rap song. Look at you knowing your threes. So.
I was wondering, like, is there anything poet Rachel learns from, like, elementary school Rachel, or vice versa? Like, how do those two selves feed into each other?
For me, the biggest intersection is read alouds. So balanced literacy, the philosophy is that you read to the children, like, at least 10 minutes a day. And so you're reading a book. There's maybe pictures and maybe there's not, right? But you're reading to them. And when there is a character in there, if there is a dragon, I am a dragon. Like, I do some voices in there, you know what I mean? Like, I do a lot of sound effects. Like, I'm moving a lot. And so, like, the performance poet part of me is like feeding into the performing for the students. Mm-hmm. And like mm-hmm. there was another person, like maybe my first year teaching, and like they're like, can I read to your kids? And so like she read, and my students were so unimpressed.
But like the bar was set too high.
But they were in college, you know, and this is like, you know, when you have somebody else that are just blandly reading, you know, the bar was set high. So I think like performing specifically is something that I like do for them. And it's fun and it's necessary. I'll also say like a lot of movement in general. Mm-hmm. Like they're kinesthetic learners. I'm a kinesthetic learner. I have to move. I mean, teaching third grade, you cannot sit an 8-year-old down for hours among a time, like right. or amount of time. When I was teaching time, I like tied the clock to my like Flavor Flav, like tied the clock to my lanyard.
Whoa, that's wild. I just remembered that you have to learn time.
I'm yeah, sorry. Oh my God.
I just like assumed I came out the womb knowing it was 3:30.
It's literally the standard. But like, and I have a funny story about that. I don't know. I think the coolest thing about like working with young human beings is that everything is new to them and everything is exciting them, and then they just question hella shit. Like I was teaching time and I'm like, you know, we'd stop, like I walked into music, but I like turn the hands and then be like, what time is it? And they have to tell me before they walk into music. But there's this one of my babies, like he came to me pissed one of the next mornings that we were learning time, and he was like, Miss Jackson. And I was like, oh, okay, what's up? Like, how you doing? I saw somebody with a watch with hands on it, but it had no numbers. And like, you know, we're adults. So I'm like, oh, like that's fashion. But for them, a watch is for time. Duh, motherfucker, what's wrong with you? Like, where are your numbers?
Now you know what time it is.
Pissed. Like, he was incensed not having it. And it's just like things like that. They challenged me all the time. Like,
hey, but low key, I'm sorry to pause real quick, but I feel him.
Yeah.
Because when I buy a watch with no numbers on it, I feel like I'm risking it all.
Like, now I'm late. Like,
do you trust Drunkenness to know that it's 11:45? Do you
know?
Really?
Just for fashion?
I don't. Like now. Mm-hmm. And it's just different things. It's things you don't think about. I don't know. I enjoy being around children. They bring a new, another quick story about that is, you tell a child to sound it out and then you have all these hidden words. The English language is trash. Mm-hmm. Like one kid read gnaw and he was filling himself like sometimes something like, I don't know, the cow gnaw, da da da. And I was like, it's gnaw. And he was like, it has a G in it. And I was like, you right?
It'll be gnaw today.
Gnaw. It's you. But they take it so seriously, like together, to get her. No, together. Like, come on. It's just the different things that like, I also have been like writing as children, like a play I wrote, we had to write ourselves in for the Victory Gardens Theater, and I wrote myself as a kid. And like the child's response to sadness, like I have a poem where I'm like a child talking about what I think depression is. And so like they also have these conversations with me because I see them the more waking hours of a day than their parents. Mm-hmm. So it's just very interesting and it just feeds right into my art. I say often my teaching is my art. Like this is something that I'm like, it's not always fun, but it is necessary, I'll say. Unlike my Joe poem, according to that one guy.
No, that ain't. He's still somewhere right now, pressed about
pressed,
the poem.
Pressed!
Let him be.
Pressed. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever write for young audiences? Do you, like, write for kids?
I try to. It's a challenge. I write for young audiences when I'm writing a lesson plan. But as far as, like, a poem or something for children, I just find myself trying to do a voice that I just feel like isn't there. I don't want to force a voice. I also talk to my students like they're 8 years old, and then if you correct them like saying I need you to work efficiently, they're thirsty to tell somebody else like I need you to work efficiently, like, you know, it's just it's like a thing they do. So if you're trying to write for young audiences, that's something that I just need to practice more. And that's a lot of people who like find out I'm a teacher and a poet, they're like, oh, like I want to book you. I know you have tons of poems that are kid friendly. And I'm like, I actually do not have any kid friendly poems. Like, but if their parents are coming, like I could do a show for them.
Is it that you feel like the stakes are higher because they'll like repeat things and like learn?
I think that I just hold myself higher. Like I could just hear like the words I'm using. I feel like when I'm talking to them, it's easy. Like when I was bringing up work efficiently. But I feel like for me, when I'm writing, I try to break it down like work well. Like I wouldn't write efficiently down. And it's like, nah, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
A final goal would possibly to have like as much as I want to do poetry. I also do want to eventually write a children's book. I mean, I know you heard it here first, folks. Like people buy children's books because you want to have a read aloud to teach a skill. What skill am I teaching? Are they doing sequencing in this book? Is this personification? It's marketing too. Like I'm like, I want to write a children's book, but also like I want it to sell. So I want to make sure I'm not writing anything. So it's a challenge that I haven't gotten over yet.
I bet you would write some bomb children's books.
I'm excited. I think so too. I just don't think I'm there yet. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking when you were talking about Pantoums, and just to cycle back for a second, but I know you were earlier talking about how you were like a great math teacher. Like you're specialized in math. And I think that makes total sense to me to like also love like a traditional form where there's like repetition and like a structure and stuff to be like that kind of like logic game.
I never thought about that, but yeah, no, you're right.
Right? I mean, I don't know. I think that like, is logic fun, like working with logic?
I'm sorry, I'm getting excited. Like, you see my face is like lighting up. Well, yeah,
shaking.
I like, because it's everything is connected with math, right? Yeah. Like, so third grade is the intro to multiplication. Once they realize multiplication is just repeated addition, like 2 times 3 is actually 2 plus 2 plus 2, they're blown away. And then once you know multiplication, you know division. It's the same numbers. And then they like are losing their shit when they see a multiplication table because they think it's cheating. And so they kind of like try to cover it up when they're like answering me. And I'm like, no, use your fingers. Like use the multiplication. So I think like numbers and logic is something I like really love to teach. And so like that's a good point about me loving Pantoums because I'm like, it's all the same. You just have to learn how to use the numbers. Use the numbers. And sometimes people are always like making jokes about poets. Like, no, I'm bad at math. Like, I understand. And I was like, well, when we start putting letters into math, that's where I'm kind of like, oh my God, what are y'all doing? but the base is the bottom levels, you know what I'm saying? I got that.
I feel like I need to relearn that.
I mean, you know, like 2 times 3 is 6. What's 6 divided by 3? 2. And they're like, it's the same numbers. And then like I draw arrows. And then like one time one of them was 6 and just kinesthetic stuff. So they like moved and then they were like, I'm over here now. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Oh, that's so cute.
That's so cute.
Well, because, like, I mean, we all remember, like, that, oh, man, I'm not going to call her out. Miss Fountas, I'm sorry. She was 5th grade. I had to call you out, girl. Yeah, I call her out. You know,
what up, Miss Fountas? Help me.
You have that one teacher where you're like, dang, you were not only mean, you were mad boring. Like, this sucked. So I'm trying my hardest to, like, really just put in as much energy as I can.
My bad teacher was Miss Nunez in 7th grade. I think we got her fired. I think she got fired at some point. I think it was like a lineage of grades that got her fired. Mm-hmm. But she was like horrible and we were also horrible too. And if Miss Nunez, if you out there listening, I'm sure you weren't as horrible as I imagined you to be. No, not Miss Nunez. That wasn't her name. Miss Nunez was nice. She was 4th grade. She was weird, though.
Called out the wrong one.
I did call out the wrong one. Wow. I'm sorry. I'm just out here, like, misrepresenting my Latina teachers out here. Franny, did you have any horrible teachers?
Well, I remember my 8th grade science teacher. I don't remember her name either, but she just didn't know science.
What?
She didn't know anything about
that
science.
Might have been
she
the school taught district, science? Though,
yeah.
Well, yeah, that might have been the
yeah,
school.
It's true. It's
she
true.
Might have been showing up thinking about pottery and they was just like, biology.
I remember one time she was like, class, if there were another ice age, what group of animals would be most likely to survive? And there was silence and then one person said, reptiles? And she said, yes.
And you remember that to this day. My girl did her job.
I was like, I don't think that's right. I don't think
reptiles wouldn't do well in ice.
Yeah, because she was like, because they're cold-blooded, so they can move. But that's exactly why they wouldn't survive. That's why you don't see reptiles in the Arctic.
You know, at first I'm like, oh, she was right. And then I thought about it like, wait, no, that's okay.
Wrong be sounding a lot like right, you know? Sometimes.
You just have to have confidence and then you know you could just shift my whole opinion. Like it's cool. It's really them Trump supporters out there. They really be wrong, but really be feeling themselves.
If you say something like a white man in Montana, everybody will believe you. Oh my God. Who's around to question him? Other white men?
In Montana.
In Montana, I am the god of everything.
It's like, you know what, Daryl? You're right.
You got this. White man named Daryl.
It's easy to hate minorities when no minorities are around. I hate Bigfoot. I ain't never see that nigga.
He does not exist.
He's never around.
No, he's never around, yo. Do you believe in love and love? Sorry.
So I was flip-flopping on the poem to do. I don't know if I wanted to do the Pantoum or the Joel poem. And I was like, what are you
We've talked about both, so
we
I think,
have talked
yeah.
about both. I think it'd be great to hear the Pantoum.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about Pantoum. Yeah.
Okay. Here's the Pantoum. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I was like, This is the Phantom. In September 2009, Darion Albert's murder was caught on tape. The video spread through the world quicker than the south side of Chicago could be gentrified through the Olympic bid. Killers are seen kicking Darion in the face and smashing his head with a wooden plank. This is a pantomime for Darion Albert from the plank. His hands were soft on my hips. We were brown together. How often does that happen? Wooden individuals shaped and dyed to look the same as them. Brown, like the next. We all look the same to them. Brown, like the next. Sturdy. Wooden individuals shaped and dyed to look the same as them. Brown, like the next. There are many uses for a snatched tree. Easy to be broken and passed around. Each ring tells an achievement of sorts. Sturdy. He needed a capable dancer. There are many uses for a snatched tree. Easy to be broken and passed around. Each ring tells an achievement of sorts. A partner whose spine can bend with the grace of politicians' tongues, built on corroding law enforcement. He needed a capable dancer. I'm someone that will sacrifice my body, spreading through skulls. A partner whose spine can bend with the grace of politicians' tongues, built on corroding law enforcement. We danced to the music made that day. A slow melody assembled from the dull connection with heads and shrieks carrying his name. I'm someone that will sacrifice my body, spreading through skulls. Admire me. Focus on me. I beat them all. We danced to the music made that day. A slow melody assembled from the dull connection of heads and shrieks carrying his name. We all look the same to them. Brown, like the next. Admire me. Focus on me. I beat them all. His hands were soft on my hips. We were brown together. How often does that happen?
Whew. Wow. That's a good ass pantomime.
Yeah, that was
thanks, pantomime. Yeah. I wrote that poem in college when LTAB, Louder Than a Bomb, finally opened College Slam. Mm-hmm. And I was in college and I was a sophomore and I wrote that poem and it was not good.
Was it a pantomime at the time as well?
No, it was not a pantomime at the time. The concept was still the plank talking about being connected to Darion's killer, but it wasn't good. And then I revisited it last year and I was like, what's the Kermit gif where he's like typing? He's like, ah! Like that was me. I'm glad that actually you all couldn't see me when I did that.
That's beautiful. And I love the ways that like sometimes form can actually be the thing that opens up a poem too, you know, like
yes.
when it's really struggling. That exercise is what actually makes it boom, boom, and bah, bah, boom a little bit, you know?
Bah, bah, boom. Mm-hmm.
Especially when writing about topics that are high stakes and like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like when I'm writing something like huge that there's so many things to say about it that like some restriction is what I need in order to say the thing that I can actually say, you know? Otherwise you could like write forever, you know? You could write about so many parts of that story.
And that restriction is actually what forces the poem to explode, too.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's got to have something to explode out of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I also love, like, the first time a new line comes up and, like, interrupts some of that repetition is, like, so jarring and fresh.
Yeah, that's so true. And you're like, ooh, it's fun. That's when I really feel, like, the fun part where you're like, oh, this line just came and interrupted, but it also comes back again and, and adds on to the foundation, I should say.
And I think, especially when we're talking about, like, these hard topics, right? So, like, writing a poem about, like, a rather tragic situation, like, it needs to remain fun for the poet to some extent, which is hard for those difficult topics. So that's why, you know, you need to have that the play of the form that allows you to still feel a lightness to the poem, or else you've kind of sometimes, I think, with free verse, you feel too locked in to the sadness or to the sorrow. Yeah,
that's a good point.
That's a great point. And it feels weird at the same time to, like, you know, be looking for play in something like that. But of course, you have to.
We are artists.
We are artists, allegedly.
That's what they call us on the streets. The streets say we are artists.
So now it is time for In Your Corner.
It is time, Nick.
I'm pulling it up right now.
For In Your Corner. So we asked our guest to bring in a poem from somebody who's in their corner. Maybe that is somebody dabbing the blood off of your eye and squirting the water in your mouth. Maybe you're dabbing the blood off their eye and squirting the water in their mouth. Like a good old-fashioned physite. So who are you Don Kinging for today?
I am Don Kinging for Fatima Oscar. A good friend and a brilliant writer.
Shout out episode 2? Three of us.
Okay, yeah. Pluto shits on the universe. When I was trying to dodge a lot of my feelings in high school, I was doing a lot of persona poems, and Robbie Q. Telfer called me out on that, which is awesome. Like, shout out to mentors that are like, you're writing about the same thing because you're not talking about this. Love you. or like how to do a persona poem but still hit home. Yeah. And so I think that Pluto shits on the universe is a brilliant poem in the voice of Pluto. Mm-hmm. You all should look this up and watch how it's written, is where the gnaw is in its own section of the poem. You thought I was going to do this?
Gnaw. Stands a break.
Yeah, I love that poem for years now. I feel like the poem is about chaos and like breaking your rules and shit. And I just like, when you like visually look at that poem, it is a form to it, but it really is like, in high school, I wouldn't have guessed that this poem would be in a poetry literary magazine because we weren't taught that it would be. You know what I'm saying? And here's a poem using hella curse words. Love that part. But also, like, that stanza break of gnaw is mad important. Like, we were learning about something that is from someone else's rules, like, about dead white poets. And here is this brown fire Muslim writer doing her shit and making her own stanzas through Pluto's voice. So I remember when I heard it. I remember when I saw it. I remember when I was like, oh, I'm feeling really down about my poem. I'm going to read this poem again. So I think this poem is very, very important and fun. Whenever it's performed, I'm like, yeah, girl, you wrote that shit, girl. I fucks with you. Like at some points where you like just stop snapping for your friend's poems and stand up and start shaking your head. Like that's me. Like I did that.
It's a monument for your poem now.
Like, yes.
Do it.
Man, Brittany at Rust Belt Finals, I definitely at one point was just standing and nodding my head and I wasn't even clapping. Like I was just like, yeah, bitch, you doing this shit. Like you are reading this poem. So this is that poem. Pluto Shits on the Universe by Fatima Askar. On February 7th, 1979, Pluto crossed over Neptune's orbit and became the eighth planet from the Sun for 20 years. A study in 1988 determined that Pluto's path of orbit could never be accurately predicted, labeled as chaotic. Pluto was later discredited from planet status in 2006. Today, I broke your solar system. Oops, my bad. Your graph said I was supposed to make a nice little loop around the Sun. Nah, I chaos like a motherfucker. Ain't no one can chart me. All the other planets, they think I'm annoying. They think I'm an escape moon running free. Fuck your moon. Fuck your solar system. Fuck your time. Your year? Your year ain't shit but a day to me. I could spend your whole year turning the winds in my bed, thinking about rings and how Jupiter should just pussy on up and marry me by now. Your day? That's an ass wipe, a sniffle. Your whole day is barely the start of my sunset. My name means hell, bitch. I am hell, bitch. All the cold you have yet to feel. Chaos like a motherfucker. And you tried to order me. Called me ninth. Somewhere in the mess of graphs and math and compass, you tried to make me follow rules. Rules? Fuck your rules. Neptune? That bitch slow. And I deserve all the sun. I can get it in all the blue gold sky I want around me. It is February 7th, 1979, and my skin is more copper than any sky will ever be. More metal. Neptune is bitch sobbing in my rear view. And I got my running shoes on. And all this sky, that's all mine. Fuck your order. Fuck your time. I realigned the cosmos. I chaosed all the hell you have yet to feel. Now all your kids in the classroom, they confused. All their clocks wrong. They don't even know what the fuck to do. They gotta memorize new songs and shit. And the other planets, I fucked their orbits. I shook the sky. Chaos like a motherfucker. It is February 7th, 1979. The sky is blue gold. The freedom of possibility. Today, I broke your solar system. Oops, my bad. And I love that poem because it's like persona, boom, 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 what's up, motherfucker? But also like it just brings up a lot of points too. Like, you tried to define me, bitch. Like,
incredible.
I dick write that poem. I do. Okay.
That's the new name of the segment. It's no longer in your corner. It's just who you dick riding this week.
Who you dick riding this week?
What poem you dick riding? We dick ride you too, Fatih.
That makes me giggle. On every episode, we like to play a little game, which we call This Versus That, where we put two things head to head, and you have to tell us which would win in a fight. So they could be two people, two concepts, two institutions, whatever. So this week, on This Versus That, in this corner, we have Job. And in that corner, we have Jezebel.
Okay.
Who would win in a fight? Go.
Jezebel would beat Job's ass. Like, read up on her. My bitch was a real bitch. Like,
but Job could take a punch.
Job took punches.
Built to take a punch.
Job
took a lot.
Job's built on him taking punches. But I feel like Jezebel, like, just had that, I mean, conniving strategy of, like, turning minds to worship her gods is, like, why people don't like her, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, I feel like Jezebel just has that, like, umph. And I feel like Job kind of, even when he was going through shit, he was taking all those punches, he was kind of like just like moping around and shit, you know? Like, I think Jezebel would not only beat his ass, I think that she would like make an example out of him. She was a queen too. So queen, like, she would be like, this is what happens when you motherfuckers disrespect me. And then like put him like for the whole courtyard to see. Like, I think Jezebel would not only annihilate this motherfucker, I think she would be like, yeah, anybody else? Like,
dang. I like
she'd
this.
Not, win not only the battle, but also the war.
The long war
to come.
Yes, my girl.
Jezebel is the biggest L that Job would have to take. You fear God, fear me.
Boom. Boom. Exactly.
Well, that settles that.
Rachel, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me.
It's fun.
Where can people find you at?
Yes.
So, fun fact, I put a Y in my name when I was like 15, because if you Google R-A-C-H-E-L Jackson, Andrew Jackson's wife pops up. So, my name on all social medias is R-A-Y-C-H Jackson. I only follow back on Twitter if you are not a Trump supporter. So if you are, goodbye.
Solid
Make
rule.
Sure that is very clear.
Yes. Put it in your bio. But R-A-Y-C-H Jackson. Rach Jackson on all social medias. The Gram. The Tumblr. A lot of people don't really get on Tumblr. I'm a Tumblr fanatic. So if you are a Tumblr, then I tumble Twitter and the Facebook.
Thank you, Ray.
Done.
Yay.
Hip, hip, hooray.
Okay.
I love that talk with Rage.
I
fall
more
in love with her every time I hear her speak.
Seriously.
She's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. She's so great. She's so funny. And yeah, it makes perfect sense that she's this great math teacher, mm-hmm. considering how her brain works in terms of form.
Yeah, I think every poet that is into form was like secretly a math geek.
Yeah,
I know,
right?
We like to pretend like we were bad at math.
I know everyone's always like, oh, I'm a poet, so I can't do math.
Secretly, you were a math geek, right? Because
well,
I was a math geek.
I was like a little, I think you were much more of a math geek than I was.
But did math get you geeked?
It
ever?
Sometimes did.
Okay.
You know, the only time really that I like for real got geeked on math was mm-hmm. geometry.
Okay.
Like doing proofs.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that shit.
Ooh.
Like I loved being able to logic something out.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't like plugging numbers in and then being like, the answer is 40. Like, I hated that shit.
Oh, see, I was a math geek, like, through and through. Like, I think I struggled with words. So, like, mm-hmm. math was, like, my, like, way to be smart.
Word.
For a long time. But I just remember, like, when we moved from, like, remainders to decimal points when doing long division, shit blew my mind, nigga. Like, because the answer used to be like 4, remainder 3. And then somebody was just like, what if I told you it was 0.2? I was like, bitch.
What?
You talking about there's part of one. You can split up one.
Wow.
You mean if I take part of the apple, you take part of the apple. Now we ain't got to argue over who has 2 apples and who has 3 because niggas got half apples out here. That's nuts.
Sharing.
Decimals. I was done. Laid. Edges snatched. By Miss Nunez. Fourth grade.
By decimals.
By
incredible.
Decimals. I had a decimal of an edge. Best believe
Point
it.
0.2 remaining.
Okay, I can geek out about math all day. We should do some thank yous and get the heck up out of here.
Fantastic.
Who you got to thank?
I would like to thank Lin-Manuel Miranda for the soundtrack of Moana, which has gotten me across the country.
Poppin'.
That soundtrack.
I would like to thank Mrs. Butterworth because I feel like she's just provided and poured so much sweetness into the people.
And everyone else who's, you know, somewhere on that Lin-Manuel Miranda to Mrs. Butterworth spectrum,
yeah.
You are also appreciated.
That's a spectrum?
Yeah.
From like Dominican playwrights to pancakes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right. We got some other things. I can't.
We'd like to thank the Poetry Foundation, particularly the Gawads, Idami Noriega and Elizabeth Burke Dane.
Yes. We'd also like to thank Post Loudness and our producer, Daniel Kisslinger. And we'd like to thank y'all for, you know, coming and listening to our little podcast.
Hanging out with us, you know, being our friends.
You know, if you want to hang out with us some more, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Versus the Podcast, BS the Podcast. Also,
make sure to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes and the NPR One app.
Ooh, and we'll see you next time, y'all.
Bye.
Don't do nothing stupid.
Never change.